It's Wednesday, April 14th, 2010, and you're listening to episode 188 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 2 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
This is still Wayne.
My name is Pat.
And I think I'm Chris.
Are you still Chris?
No, that's Wayne. I think I'm Chris.
Three announcements to hack through real quick before we get down to the show. Though actually, Pat first has a confession to make.
I don't have anything to confess.
Drop trow.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, I'm having flashbacks to Sunday here.
Yeah. So at our Sunday game,
it was 3 inches from my face.
Yeah.
And I was standing a foot and a half from him.
Chad says something like, it's time to game. Oh, no, Pat says it's time to game. And Chad says to Pat, so take off your pants. And Pat actually does.
Now,
and
Chad says take off your pants all the time. And normally when Pat's doing this, he'll unbutton and he'll stop.
There's a humor breaking point.
Yeah. Where
you say to somebody in the group, take off your pants. And they unbuckle their belt, and you know that's where they're going to stop. They're just trying to be funny.
Yeah, and I've been there a few times, and that's exactly what you're expecting.
And not this time, no. Yeah, he did not stop.
I broke that fourth wall.
I took it to the limit. It's not that I wasn't expecting that, because I have friends who, when you ask them, I've told you guys a story before where I have a friend and he wears boxer shorts, and he wears crazy boxer shorts, mainly like Scooby-Doo and stuff. So we go to parties, and I'm like, hey, Tommy, what kind of underwear are you wearing? You know, because I'm freaking out people around me who don't know him. And he'll just, I don't know. Let me see. And he whips off his belt and he drops his pants right to his ankles. And you look at it, and he has these really great adult Scooby-Doo boxers or heart boxers. It's like, I'm wearing my heart boxers today. And one time, I'm like, hey, Tommy, which kind of underwear are you wearing? And we do our bit, and he whips his belt off and drops them right down to the ankles. And he's like, I think I forgot to put underwear on today.
Because, you know, I commonly forget whether or not I have underwear on. It's just something I can't feel. You know, walking around in my pants.
How could you not know if you've got underwear on?
The fact that I've got underwear on or not.
Well, you wouldn't, because as I found out this Sunday, you wear tighty whities.
Yeah, and you can. That's why I won't wear boxers.
Okay, see, I've never worn boxers, but can you just not feel them at all?
No. Well, I mean, it's like
you really can't.
Wow.
That's why I won't wear boxers, because it's the same as not wearing underwear. It's the why bother underwear.
For anyone why bother?
I think why bother is a brand of underwear, I believe.
I think it's the don't get it caught in the fly. Underwear.
So for anyone that wants to follow this kind of brilliance all throughout the week, twitter.com/feartheboot, I'd say all we talk about on there is nonsense, but quite frankly, all anybody talks about on Twitter is stupid nonsense. So twitter.com/feartheboot, I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
Three announcements real quick. And four announcements. Fear the Boot has just lost to host. The other three announcements is, first off, Raina's Wings is still going on, and donations will still be accepted through the end of May. Now, of course, the March of Dimes is not exactly a charity. It shuts down then, and so donations will be accepted at any time. But if you want to get in on the contest we are doing, which is backed by Arc Dream, Drive Through, and Polymancer, who have all put a prize support for this, if you donate anything to this cause, your name will be put in a hat for drawings for prizes from these organizations. I still don't have the details on those, but if you are interested in getting in on that, be sure to check the show notes. You're going to want to go out to Raina's Wings, make a donation in the name of a fellow booter who tragically lost his baby daughter by the name of Raina. And when you make a donation, just be sure to either leave in the comment field that you're if you're the booter, or send a private message to Necronomatron telling him what your real name is or what name you made the donation under, because there are non-booters that are donating to this, so we just want to be sure we're drawing from the right pool of names. And if you made one already, as I said last show, just go back and inform him. That's still valid, so he can still get you into the drawing. Second, our Blood Bowl League is still forming. In order to run this, we want at least 12 teams on a platform. Right now, we're not doing so good on the 360, but on Steam, we're pretty close. We're up to like 10 or 11, I think. If you want to join the Blood Bowl League, be sure to check the rules. Once again, I'll link it off the show notes. The cutoff date for sign up is noon Central Time on Thursday, April 22nd, so be sure to get out there soon. Last but not least, and this is a fun one, if you were not able to make it to Fear the Con 3, there's a couple videos we've had posted already, but there's one more that Chad is going to help me slice up into three parts and post, because YouTube will not allow you to have a video that's more than 10 minutes in length.
Or 2 gig.
which is Mikey Mason's entire comedy routine was videotaped by someone.
Nice.
And I just got his permission to post it. And I asked him, I said, you know, I know this is your copyrighted material. This is what you make your living off of. Are you okay with me posting it?
And his response was, oh, I'm so drunk. My van's on fire.
By which Chad means he said, go for it. And so we will be posting that. I don't know when exactly, at some point this week, because I got to get it to Chad. And then Chad's got to take some time to cut it up into the three parts and whatever. So I don't know what to say, except just keep checking the Fear the Boot blog throughout the week. And at some point, that will go live.
And you know what I want to do?
Get down, get funky.
I want to thank our fans, because I am enjoying some very, very fine cherry liqueur given to us by two friends, and I am enjoying them out of Texas glass that says Fear the Boot, Tex, host 2010, and a boot, mine's at home. And all the hosts, except Chris, has a glass with their name etched on, and one of our fans gave it. Derek gave it to us at Fear the Con, and I want to thank him very much. And Derek, I'm raising a glass to you, man. Thank you very much.
So, Derek, I do not hold a grudge.
So why doesn't Chris have a glass?
Because apparently I suck.
Because, as in all things in life, Chris is cursed. I didn't drop the box. There's no damage to any of it. It was never bumped into anything. The box went from the con to my truck to my kitchen table, and I open them up, and I'm pulling glass out thinking, wow, this is so cool. Thanks, man. This is awesome. And then I hear that crunching glass on glass sound, and I'm like, oh, I really hope this is Texas glass, because we never get to see him. But I pulled it out, and it was Chris. So.
It was as old and brittle as Chris.
Yeah.
But I especially want to thank him, because I still don't know where, in the middle of moving, I don't know where my box of glasses are. So I've been drinking out of mine for the last 2 weeks as my glass at home. I'm actually drinking out of John's glass right now.
I would have some sort of a witty retort about something I have that you guys don't, but that's just not true.
You've got your age, Chris.
You've got your age.
Really.
Oh, you know what? I can still...
You have the 70s.
Welcome to them.
I can still, sit back and relish the victory I had over Dan in Battletech. So I do have that.
You know what? And I sit here and relish the victory I have over you in diplomacy.
Oh, yeah. You're no kidding, man. My ass is still red from that beating.
All right. So we've got a role-playing topic. Before we get to that, there was something that we did about a year ago as we were going into the summer film season that Chad, you wanted to talk about again this year, which is movies that we are looking forward to.
Yeah, we don't guarantee are good.
Yeah, but
they could totally bomb, but it's stuff we're looking forward to.
Piqued our interest, and you guys might be interested too. And in the show notes, where possible, I will track down trailers and link to them. Mm-hmm. Though, fair warning, trailers seem to be getting more and more spoiler heavy as the years go by, for some reason.
I'm sorry to steal your thunder on this, but you're going to mention Iron Man 2. Everybody knows you're a huge Iron Man fan. The trailer for Iron Man 2, they did the teaser, which was cool. They did a full one, the first full one, which was cool, but showed a lot.
The second one's even worse.
And then I refused to watch the second one until I see the movie.
Well, and I won't say second one's quite on this level, but as I sit there with Carla going to see movies, so we go to see a fair number of movies, which is kind of a weird disconnect, because if you go back anything prior to the past 5 years, there are tons of movies everybody in the world has seen, and I have not.
Yeah.
I just, growing up, was not a big movie watcher, was not a big TV watcher. There are tons of titles where I could get everybody growing, because they would be shocked I have never seen them.
I wouldn't be, because I haven't seen them either. That's a continual ongoing thing for me, is that I've never seen a lot of the big movies.
I get people who groan when I mention the movies I've seen, because I've seen some really obscure they're like, ah, you elitist snob. If it's not in English, it's good, huh? I'm like, yeah, maybe.
But over the past several years, I have been a real avid moviegoer. Carl and I go, and we see a lot of movies. And I can't tell you how many times we've been sitting there watching a trailer, and we'll have one of two responses. One is, well, this is obviously crap. Or the other is, by the end of the trailer, we'll just look at you and be like, well, there's a movie we don't need to see.
Why do I have to bother seeing this?
Yeah, we just got the 5-minute version of the entire film. I know the entirety of the plot to it.
You know who did a really good trailer that had spoilers in it? Was Watchmen.
Well, do you think Watchmen is a different bird because everybody already knew the story?
No, not everybody knew the story, because Watchmen, the comic, isn't exactly mainstream. It's very popular,
right,
and it's had mainstream penetration, but I watched it. It's like, if you've read the comic, it's quote-unquote spoilers. You know what's going to happen. You're like, oh my god, that's this scene. Oh my god, that's this scene. Oh my god, that's this from the comic book. This movie is going to be so cool, is the reaction. But if you haven't read the comic book, none of the spoilers were in any kind of context, and thus nothing was really spoiled for you.
They did the same thing for 300 and for a lot of those type of movies. It's something they can do pretty easily when it's a matter of a one-shot versus a regular series, because people actually know those scenes. Who knows a single scene from X-Men? Well, I could come up with, you know, thousands of them, but
yeah.
It's not the same.
Populous. Yeah.
Cyclops killing Sinister, that's about the only one I can give you.
I know exactly the scene you're talking about, but I'm betting a lot of people that would go see the movie would have no clue.
What was Sinister's?
Mm-mm. Sinister is not his father.
I thought they played it that way at one point in the... All right, let's see. All right, well, I remember a panel. That's all I remember. I was in some...
You're thinking Star Wars.
Between hits of the bong, I managed to catch that Cyclops killing Sinister, and then I would just took another hit, and there's all haze from there.
Cyclops, I am not your father.
They were on an island, and Cyclops was not a number, and I don't know. It's just... It's all...
Did you know the prisoner... You know I'm a huge Prisoner fan, right? Think it was HBO, has remade The Prisoner.
No, I didn't
And
know
I've
that.
Seen a couple of the episodes of it. Oh my God, it's good.
Is it really?
Yes.
AMC or something.
Yeah, AMC, that's right.
It was AMC.
I've seen the first two episodes of it. They actually put the whole episode online on their website, and woo, it looks good.
All right, let's get back to what we were talking about, which is movies we're looking forward to coming up this summer. And right now, I'm going to go ahead and clock in and clock out, because I got one. Yeah. Iron Man 2. That's it. There is nothing else coming out this summer that really has me excited. That's not to say there are no other good movies. I'm just saying I'm personally not sold on any of them
right now. The three I'm looking forward to are all comic book movies.
Yeah, there's some really good comic book movies that are going to be coming out this summer.
Iron Man 2, I'm really looking forward to. I think that's going to be good. The first one was good, which surprised the hell out of me, because it's Iron Man. Iron Man's not good. I mean, you're a fan. I mean, I don't mean to bash anybody's fandom of it, but it's not a popular comic book.
No,
at least it wasn't.
But the character does have a lot of potential if you got a writer that knew how to leverage it.
Which they did.
And when that movie was coming out, I took a look at it and said, they need a guy who's a chemically addicted womanizer. They got Robert Downey Jr. to basically play himself. I mean, it's an autobiographical role just about, except with powered armor.
Right.
And it was just, it was very well executed. I mean, I almost want to say perfectly executed, because it had
It was a summer action flick. We're not talking Shakespeare here, but it was really good.
It was very well done. And
I was shocked by how much I enjoyed it, because I'm not an Iron Man fan. At all.
Neither was I, Wayne, and I loved it.
The next movie I'm really looking forward to is Kick-Ass.
Sell me on Kick-Ass, because I've not read the comic books. The trailers do nothing for me.
Okay, so here's the thing. You should not go see it. You won't like it. And I like it because I enjoyed the comic book. The comic book is very good and has no story. There's no story whatsoever. I mean, there's this very thin veil of this is what is happening, and then the characters do stuff. It's not like this story with these twists and turns and all this craziness. Characters don't really develop.
It is not a superhero story.
It's about violence.
Yeah.
It's about real people becoming a superhero, and that's not about saving the day, and that's not about being great. It's about violence. It is about physical pain.
So is it like Mystery Men minus the comedy? Is that
No, they don't have comedy.
It sounds like it's more like Fight Club with costumes.
That is much closer.
There you go.
It's basically about the comic book story. At least, is about a teenage kid who decides to put on the costume, and he does this
but
for
it's,
adventure.
It's in
but
our
he
world.
Does.
There's no Superman. Yeah. There's no superheroes in this world. This is our world.
Oh, he is the only heroic character in the entire series.
I think I'm getting Kick-Ass mixed up with another movie that's coming out. It's the one where all I know is there's like a little short woman who wears a brightly colored wig. And it's a superhero-esque movie.
Oh, no,
her name's Hit Girl.
Yeah, and she's 10.
Yeah, I think you got it right, Dan.
She should be the most disturbing character in the whole movie if they do her right.
And this movie looks really good.
Yes, it does.
It's very true to the essence of what the movie is. It is, if that makes any sense. It's not trying to tell a story. It's going to try to be incredibly violent and very funny and very dark humor about it, if they do it right.
Okay, what else?
Like I said, I know the kind of movies you like. I'm not one to presume what you do and don't like.
No, but you've known me long enough. You're not always going to be right, but
sure,
you can probably get it in the ballpark.
So what you're saying, Chad, is it's No Road?
You know, I never saw The Road. I never watched that.
You say 2 hours of your life is what you did. Holy crap. Holy crap.
I'm keeping quiet on this one because I'm just waiting for the DVD to come out. Then Dan and I can have a throwdown.
Oh, no, I really, Chris, unless you are a fanboy apologist, there is no way, because you will watch that and be like, you are absolutely right. Unless you are a hardcore fanboy apologist who will not allow yourself to dislike it, unless you are of that mentality.
And if you are, we definitely want to record this conversation.
You know, I know people who've read the book and who are huge fans of the book who did not like the movie. Not because, oh, it didn't hold true to the book and this character was not done right. No, they just didn't care for the movie. It wasn't a very good movie.
It's just,
I haven't seen it.
I can see how it may work better as a book. Stare at a wall for 2 hours. And maybe every 15 minutes shift and look at a different wall. And that's pretty much the experience of watching the movie. Absolutely nothing occurs. Mm-hmm. So, and there's supposed to be this great character journey, but quite frankly, no great character journey occurs. I guess about an hour and a half through it, Carl and I look at each other and we're just both like, is this movie ever going to go anywhere? Is there anything that's going to happen in this movie? It's just like, yeah, we go here and do this, and then we go here and do that, and then we go here and do this. And none of it's all that interesting. Anyways, all right, what else are you looking forward to?
The Replacements.
I'm looking forward to that one, too. Basically, every movie you've just mentioned, I'm looking forward to.
And they're all comic book
movies.
What's The Replacements? You know the A-Team movie?
Yeah.
Now, imagine that without the 80s nostalgia and actually being good.
So it's an action movie about an ex-military guys? I mean,
Pretty close. I've never read the comic, but basically it sold itself to me as just from the trailer. And I went back and I looked up and saw it was a comic book movie. I had no idea. I was just sold on the trailer.
I thought that was called The Losers.
Both are coming out right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I saw a trailer.
I want to see both of them.
Trailer for The Losers.
Is The Losers the one that has Arnold Schwarzenegger in it?
No, that one you're thinking of, that's one of mine. That's one of my picks. That's The Expendables.
Good God, The Losers, The Replacements, The Expendables.
Trailer finally came out for that a couple weeks ago. That movie looks ridiculously awesome. I mean, it just looks really good.
Pat, that is exactly why there are so few movies I'm excited about, because quite frankly, they're all the freaking same.
Yeah.
The names are similar. The concept is similar. It's... let's take an obscure comic book and turn it into a really weird esoteric movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all that's coming out this summer.
You know what I'm looking forward to?
They all seem very interchangeable to me.
What I'm looking forward to, and I don't think it's over the summer,
is Toy Story 3.
I finally saw a full preview of this, and I'm excited for it. I saw it actually before How to Train Your Dragon in 3D.
How was How to Train Your Dragon?
I am pumped about that. The movie was great, but what I'm pumped about was the 3D in it. Because I have never seen 3D done as well as was done in this movie. 3D is usually just a big, boo, jump out at you, scare you.
Yeah, it's coming right at me.
Yeah, this was not that at all. I'm watching the movie, and the whole movie seems to be just like it's all around you.
Right.
It's the entire movie was made beginning to end with the 3D in mind. It was all very good, you know, computer animation.
That's something that I loved when I was watching, and this wasn't by a stretch of the imagination a great movie, but watching Disney's A Christmas Carol that came out several months ago, their use of 3D, they had the it's coming right at me gratuity scenes, which quite frankly were typically just junk. They just annoyed me. But there were many scenes where it'd just be like two guys talking in a room and there'd be a window behind them beyond which you could see a street. And just that sense that there's no fourth wall was incredible. And I wish more movies would employ 3D that way of not trying to use it for any just silliness, but just using it to draw you into the movie a little more.
It blew me. Even the trailers before it were all 3D. It's like everything is all wrapped around me. And I was really into the movie and it really did draw me in more. It was properly used. Versus everything I've heard about Clash of the Titans, where they threw it in after the fact.
So here's my question about that. Do you have to wear the glasses in that one, or is it...
You do have to wear the glasses.
Yes. Okay.
Well, how would you not wear the glasses?
Well, I didn't know. I assumed that you probably did. I just
like refractive mirrors or...
Virtual light.
Yeah,
the glasses
exactly.
are really cool man. Now, though, because they're not... Like, the old glasses were a big red and a big blue, and if you're looking at something that's not in 3D, it looks blurry.
Yeah.
The new glasses aren't like that at all. You can walk around with them normally.
I will be interested to see in the coming year or so what people start to think about these glasses, because I've heard a lot of complaints with, like, eye strain and stuff on these things.
I have, too.
Yeah.
And I have yet to see a 3D movie with the new glasses, but I know just sitting at a computer screen all day, I get enough eye strain that I don't want to go to a movie and look at this cool stuff and come out of it with eye strain. And
potentially some damaging effects to the eye.
So I didn't have
I think
it'll
be interesting
all.
To see what.
Well, it doesn't bother me either.
It's such brand new technology.
But I, like Pat's saying, I have heard from a lot of people. There's a bunch of people on our forums who complain about this that have said they cannot see the movie for one of two reasons. Either number one, there's something wrong with one of their eyes where they can't get the 3D effect anyway. Or secondly, there's nothing per se wrong with their eyes, but when they put on the glasses, everything's just blurry and they just get a headache from it. It doesn't look 3D to them. And we've had a fair number of people say this. In fact, when we were running Fear the Con 3 and doing the post-con events, some people wanted to go see the Alice in Wonderland movie. And so we went to see it, but there was a guy in the group who said, look, I can't go to the 3D version because it's just I've got these problems with my eyes or whatever. So, I mean, it's a fairly common thing. And I really do have to wonder, I know why they're doing the 3D thing, partially because it's new and cool, partially because it's harder to duplicate and steal. Because if you bring in a handy cam and try to film the 3D movie, you won't get anything usable. Mm-hmm. But the question that I have,
but you know, is you know what's stupid about that is that the majority of the movies that are in theaters that get released online are not from handy cams or phone cams. They're people in the studio who work there who are releasing them.
Screener editions get copied.
Well, screener editions get copied, and it's just like, yeah, that's a piss poor excuse.
Oh, no, I completely agree, but my point being that I think in the end who this is going to hurt is the movie going public, because there's a percentage of the movie going public that simply won't be able to tolerate what they're being exposed to.
You also get to a ticket price threshold too with 3D movies, because they use that as a justification to charge more for it. And be, you know, if you're going to be dropping $15 on a movie, 30 if you're going to be with a date, you got to be guaranteed you're going to get your money's worth for this 2 hours that you're about to spend this money on.
Speaking of technology and the price point, they're testing something in theaters around the country. We actually have one here.
The Tingler!
Called the D-Box, where you're sitting in a seat, and usually it is a IMAX 3D movie. Your seat's moving with you.
It is the Tingler!
Oh, great. So now you've got to take, like, Bonine tablets or Dramamine or something before you go see a movie.
Honestly, I don't think I could do a flying movie with it. I've discussed before, I have issues about flying. And, like, I was watching Superman in 3D, which was a horrible example of 3D because it was just scenes thrown in. It bothered me in that scene. So now imagine, take that one step further. You're in whatever your phobia is. If it's snakes, if it's plane, whatever. You're in a movie. You have the glasses on. It's all around you. And now your chair is moving with you.
Wouldn't that be dandy in a Spider-Man movie and the little kid behind you yaks all over you? Because,
my God, I cannot wait to see a porn in theater like that.
See, just moves back and forth.
That'll be awesome.
So, all right, let's get back on topic because I don't want to. What other movies are you guys looking forward to?
I am really, really, really immensely looking forward to the Avatar: The Last Airbender movie.
Oh, you mean the good Avatar that's going to come out?
Yes, not Avatar. That's the official title, I think, is The Last Airbender.
Yeah.
I am a gigantic fan of the Nickelodeon cartoon. I absolutely love it. And I'm really, really looking forward to the movie. I had a lot of trepidation about the movie because M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong is directing it.
Yeah, but he didn't write it.
While I really enjoy the hell out of The Sixth Sense, I don't like any of his other movies.
Well, yeah, so
he didn't write The Last Airbender, though. Yeah. So he's just directing. So the odds are pretty good.
Well, this is definitely, though, a moment of redemption for him because he made a couple really good movies and then made a series of bombs. And so
he was your favorite director for a while.
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
For the first movie or two, maybe three that he made, Six Sense, Unbreakable.
Six Sense and Unbreakable were good, but then it started to go downhill with Signs.
But yeah, then it just really started. Signs got a little bit stupid.
Yep.
And then
I've seen
The Village, it had some moments that were kind of cool. It was overall pretty dumb. Lady in the Water, once again, it had its moments, but overall was pretty dumb.
Like I said, I'm a gigantic fan. I've seen the series. I own the series. I've seen it a couple of times.
I will say, I'm not an anime fan.
It's not anime.
Yeah, it's
the style is.
No. I mean, my point being, though, it's I'm not a big fan of the cartoon.
Okay.
Whatever we're going to call it.
Well, you're just wrong.
Okay. But I'm not.
And I am backing Dan up in his wrongness because I don't care.
Well, you're both wrong.
I am not. But I will have to say, the teaser trailer, I've not seen a full trailer, but the teaser trailer I saw did look pretty cool.
Yeah.
Am I pumped for it? I don't know. But the teaser trailer did look pretty cool.
The trailer looks really good, and I don't care about the
I was really, really bummed out when I heard M. Night was directing it, because he directed all those bombs. Oh, crap, they're going live action. Well, that's going to be a knock against it, because it's going to be very hard for it to be good in that regard. Oh, M. Night's going to direct it. Oh, man, he's going to make it bomb. And then they showed that teaser trailer where Aang, the main character, is doing his sort of kung fu thing with the candles and
yeah,
the wind.
They're sieging the building.
Yeah, and I was like, you know, this might actually be good, because there were accuracies in that. There were all these things like Uber fans notice that were like, oh, wow, that's really cool. And then they showed the next trailer, the full trailer.
I haven't seen that
and
yet.
I was like, that is really good. It's supposed to be a trilogy if it's successful.
Right.
And it's like, they're doing this episode. They're doing this out of this episode. I can't believe they're following this storyline. Oh my God, this character is going to be in that. And that means this storyline is going to be in. Oh, wow.
You know,
that's so cool.
What I'm interested in, I don't think it's a summer movie. I think it's a fall or winter release that I can't say I'm pumped about for some reason. I'm afraid to be is Voyage of the Dawn Treader, which I believe comes out later this year.
Did you watch Prince
Caspian? Did they actually make that?
Yes, they did. And it's coming out, if I remember right, later this year. But I'm afraid to be eager, because within that series, my two favorite books are Horse and His Boy and Voyage of the Dawn Treader.
Yeah, Voyage of the Dawn Treader is my favorite.
Voyage
as well.
Of the Dawn Treader is such an unusual, and to recycle a word from earlier in the episode, esoteric story that if they do it right, it will be kick ass, but it has so much potential to get screwed up that I'm afraid to be eager.
Do you think that you could also run into the problem of this is something that you hold dear to you, and this is something that's from your childhood, and so it might not live up to the nostalgia expectation?
But it's not something from my childhood, and here's why I say that. I actually have fairly well followed the advice C.S. Lewis gave regarding his own books, which is he said that there's three times you ought to read his stories. Once when you are a child, once when you are a young adult, and once when you are an old man.
That is good advice. Triple royalties.
Well, but no, his point being, so those are the three times when you want to dream about fairy tales.
Yeah.
Is when you're a child looking up at the stars, when you're a young adult setting out into the world, and when you're an old man looking back on the years that have gone by and seeing all the wonderment of the grandchildren and all that kind of stuff. And you
so
look
his
back
advice
that,
is the riddle of the Sphinx,
I guess.
No, I know.
But
I agree.
My point
with
being
that's
what
cool.
I did. The first time I read the books was near the end of my childhood, very close to adolescence. Mm-hmm. The second time I read the entire series through was in my early to mid 20s. Mm-hmm. And so this is not something where all I remember is mom or dad reading this to me when I was six. This is something that I read as a discerning adult and was able to analyze and come walk away with some literary response to it. And so, no, I don't think that's the case. Mm-hmm. I think the difficulty of making a C.S. Lewis book into a movie is the fact that there is so much he intentionally leaves up to your imagination. There's intentionally so much he leaves undescribed. He is the master of saying 100 things in 5 words. Mm-hmm. He's brilliant at it. And he does things like, he'll say, they had a grand feast that had this and that and all the other things you would expect at a feast. Well, what would you expect at a feast?
Yeah,
that's total interpretation of the reader's mind. And there's so much like that he does with his stories that I, from the very outset of them making Chronicles of Narnia movies, said, I don't think they can do these well, for the simple reason that you have to now define and visualize and clarify all these things that C.S. Lewis wrote to the mind's eye.
What did you think of the first movie?
I thought it was good. I thought they did a great job with it, but it fell short on that one thing. You know, it was an enjoyable movie. I'm glad
I think they made some
it.
Casting missteps. But
yeah, I agree.
All right.
I agree they did make some casting missteps. It had a few issues, but all things considered, I enjoyed the movie. Mm-hmm. It was certainly Know the Road. And I walked away with a pretty positive impression.
Did you watch Prince Caspian?
I did also watch Prince Caspian.
I have not seen that yet. Was it very
good? I haven't either. Of course, I've never read any of the books.
Well, so. Really? The books are good.
I don't think it possessed the same strengths as the first one, but
I agree.
It definitely had its moments.
Yes.
And there were some very, very high points in that movie, but on the whole, I don't think it was as good as the first.
And Prince Caspian, because of the way it moves, was a little bit too short to quite make a movie, and so they had to invent some things. At times it fit, at times it got a little awkward, but having said that, once again, it was a good movie. It was worth the time to see. Is it one of my favorites? No. But an example of this is in the Voyage of the Dawn Treader book. There's a scene where Oh, this is going to be a huge spoiler for anyone who hasn't read the book, so maybe I shouldn't talk about it. But there's a scene in there that it very much appeals to the mind's eye, and I don't see how you can do it in a movie unless you're just a brilliant director without wrecking the scene.
Yeah.
So, and for anyone who does not know what I'm referring to, the spoiler-free way of describing it is this: the Island of Dreams. I'll just leave it at that.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of brilliant directors, two of the movies I'm definitely looking forward to. Obviously, we talked about The Expendables, and this is not the brilliant director comment. But for anyone who grew up on 1980s action movies, this is essentially your wet dream with the number of people that are going to be in there. The movie's basically going to be lots of explosions and fights, and I think the story will basically be very, very thin. But it doesn't have to be very thick because of what you're going to go into this movie and expect. You're going to expect, you know, Stallone. You're going to expect Stath. You're going to expect Mickey Rourke, Dolph Lundgren, you know, Schwarzenegger and Bruce Willis, and you're going to expect lots of fights. And I'm looking forward to it in that sense that it's going to be a very good feel-good kind of movie with a heavy dose of nostalgia in it. Plus, also seeing a guy as old as Stallone, who's actually older than I am, running around and doing what he's doing is pretty cool. It's pretty cool. The other one, though, and this is where we get into the good director thing, is Inception.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Scott Pilgrim versus the World, because I'm looking forward to that.
That one actually, I saw the trailer for that. That looks pretty good. But Inception, I honestly don't know that much what it's about, but it's Chris Nolan's, you know, next movie, basically. And the star power looks pretty good. And I watched the trailer, and it looks like one of those really heavy mind kind of movies on the lines of Memento. And it just looks really good. And I would just encourage anybody just to go out, find and watch the trailer, and you'll kind of see what I'm talking about. But that movie actually looks really, really interesting.
Getting to role-playing games, there's a topic that came up on the forums that created an interesting discussion that then got a little bit silly, but nonetheless, the basic conversation was a really good one, which is this. Is it okay to lie to your players? Guy who goes by the name of McNutcase on our forums, I'm heavily paraphrasing this, but it basically goes along the lines that he was setting up a campaign. And in this particular world, one of the big discoveries was going to be the existence of something within the setting.
Dwarves.
And when his players were making characters, the question was invariably going to come up, well, what can I play? Do other metahuman races exist? And what he was saying is, when the players ask, should I lie to them? One of the things that we have espoused for a long time on this show is that there is a real importance to player and game master trust, to having a sense of trust around the table. So there's a lot of times the game master may seem to go off on a tangent. There's a lot of times the game master may ask you to do something with your character, or a player may ask for the right to do something with their character. And if the trust does not exist between the player and the GM, then the game's going to break down. Of course, you can take this also to some of its ultimate extremes, like outright cheating and such. But I think even well shy of cheating, you have a lot of issues where trust is an important thing. Now, I think certainly most gamers would accept that when they come into the game world, there is an in-character level of knowledge that they have. Let's take real life. You, for example, sitting right here right now, do not know everything about the world around you. Probably within this coming year, there will be animals discovered on some obscure island or somewhere in the backwoods that we previously did not know existed.
Like Bigfoot.
Let's just say, for example, I mean, it's a silly example, but let's go with that. Let's say it's not a hoax. Somebody really does tranquilize and drag back a real Bigfoot. Okay, for example, even that aside, there are things we don't know about the world. Mountain gorillas, for example, I believe were not discovered until the 1920s or 30s. So there's an example that's kind of right along those lines. So your character does not know everything. You don't know every machination. Certainly, if your plot surrounds a big reveal about the setting that everyone thought such and such was extinct or gone or didn't exist or wasn't possible, or in truth, the king is about to betray everybody. You know, these are things you don't want to tell people during character creation. You know, they say, is the king trustworthy? Oh, yes, he's absolutely a trustworthy and good person. Well, the fact is he's not. Your plot hinges on him turning out to be the worst son of a bitch on the face of the earth. You can hedge some of this, I think, through in-character speech of saying, well, as far as your characters know, or you tell your players up front, look, I'm going to tell you what you guys would know.
The king was known to be an upstanding character.
What do you do when your players call you on that bluff? When they say, well, the king is known to be an upstanding character. Oh, that's cool. So he's a rank bastard then.
Even before that, directly to Wayne's thing, the problem you could fall into with that kind of hedging is you as a game master know when you're being less than truthful. And so you're careful to wrap what you say in language of, well, as far as your characters know, or the word around town is that. And you run into the danger that the first time you don't say that, you've kind of given away what was a lie and what wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or you have to go to the opposite extreme of wrapping everything you say in the language of, well, as far as your characters know, or as far as the set around town, to the point that pretty soon the setting description and plot delivery get ridiculous. And mm-hmm. then as Chad said, and it was also brought up by a guy by the name of Wizard on our yeah. forums, is what happens then when the player finally calls you on it. The GM says, there are no dwarves in the setting as far as your characters know. And the player says, okay, so are there, aren't there? Well, as far as your characters know, there aren't. Yeah, well, are there or aren't there in the setting?
Yeah, yeah.
And at this point...
For the record, in my opinion, if you're that player, you're being a dick.
Well, you're being a dick, but nonetheless, it's happened.
I don't know if you're being a dick. I mean, my thing is, there's a difference between in-game knowledge and metagame knowledge. And I think most people can agree that in-game knowledge should be limited. Your characters only know so much, and you shouldn't play them as they know more, even if you do know more. That's called good role-playing. Should metagame knowledge be limited? And I'm of two minds on this. On one hand, yeah, as a GM, I really like to limit the metagame knowledge because, I mean, what is a good story except springing surprises on your characters and doing reveals, unveiling plot to them over time instead of just wheeling up the wheelbarrow and taking a big old dump right in front of them. On the other hand, we've encountered that too, where we've had game masters who tell us, okay, I'm running this game, and it's going to be this campaign setting. I better not catch any of you guys going out and buying this campaign setting, because then you'll know everything about the campaign. Well, as a player, I'm sitting there, it's like, yeah, but I'm curious about the campaigns. It's a rich, interesting world I personally want to know more about. And if you trust me as a role player, and I'm a good role player, then it won't make a difference. I won't...
In a situation like that, though, I think that the game master is... He's approaching it wrong to you. He needs to approach saying, look, I want to try and do a campaign where players don't have that meta knowledge. You as a player is going to have the exact same knowledge base as your character because I want to try it as a simulation. So please don't go out and buy this campaign setting. Let me provide you with the information that you would know. That's just a bad approach on his part.
Well, let me cut the middle ground here and say this. In the case of the example Chad's talking about, which is something that actually happened in one of our gaming groups, the problem we had, and it was specifically a Ravenloft game, and the game master did not want us buying the Ravenloft book. And said that
not that I would ever do
buy it anyway, but the point being, he didn't want to spy in the setting book. And in this case, I think the problem was that he was approaching the setting as the plot. He was right. treating the setting book like a module.
And that's how he was running his game.
And he would even, if he was sitting here, probably admit today that it was bad. I mean, this was back when we were much
younger.
Oh, this
was teenage crap.
Yeah, exactly. This was not the pinnacle of his game mastering. He later went on to run games that were very good and very developed. It's just a mistake he made early in his GMing career. But we were talking earlier about movies. And when we talked about movies, Chad, you said, for example, that you don't want to see trailers because they spoil things.
Mm-hmm.
If I spoil the ending of a movie for you, even if the characters don't know how it ends, the fact is you know how it's going to end, and that ruins your experience as a moviegoer. And in the same way, if I talk to a player, and let's for a minute put the issue of trust itself aside, and say, I completely trust you as a player not to abuse any of your metagame knowledge. You know the big reveals of the setting, of the plot. You read my entire set of game notes by accident for some reason.
Yeah, all 300 pages,
all 300 pages
fell in front of you.
For some reason, you picked them all up. And I totally trust you not to abuse that knowledge. But the fact is, at the end of the day, you as a player cannot have the same experience of surprise and confusion, all those emotions, because you already knew what was coming out.
I'm still of two minds on this because I read a lot of books and these books get made into movies and I enjoy movies and I'll go see the movies. And it doesn't detract from my enjoyment that I've read the book. And I know, like, we'll say Kick-Ass, for example, if they follow that book exactly and the trailers seem to indicate that they will, more or less, I know exactly what is going to happen. I know all the plot points it is going to hit 1, 2, 3 in a row. And there are some really big twists, which is strange for a movie that doesn't have any story to it. But there are some really big twists. And that's not going to bother me. If the movie's good, I'll still enjoy the movie. And I won't have enjoyed it less if I hadn't read the book.
Okay, along those lines, so let me ask you this, because you're talking about a book that is then made into a movie, but let's just take...
You're also talking about an action movie versus a mystery.
Let's stick back and talk about just a book. It hasn't been made into a movie.
you get a new book. Mm-hmm. It's brand new. It's not something that's been out for, you know, whatever, or it's something you've never read before. Are you the kind of person that will pick up the book and read the last chapter first and then read the book? See, that to me is kind of like what you're talking about here. And that's in this sort of instance. But now, I think there are other things. But see, that's the kind of thing that drives me nuts is the people. And I think that some of these persistent people are saying, yes, but do dwarves exist?
Dwarves don't exist. Dwarves exist.
Yeah, just take a chill pill there. Just go with the story and let's experience it. You don't need to read the conclusion of the campaign, and then we go through and live it.
Isn't that denial right there?
I hate that kind of thing. I don't want to know the ending of the story until I read it and read the end.
You said
my wife does that. She reads the last chapter of a book and before she reads it, and it drives me insane.
Pat, you said something at dinner that I think really drove it home for me. At dinner, we talk about, does this topic have legs? And we kind of talk about it a little bit, and then we have to stop ourselves so we don't talk about the whole thing. But Pat said something very interesting to me. And he's like, I don't think that the players should be told this information because the GM wants to deliver a certain experience to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that experience, part of the experience is the reveal and that sort of thing. And that really hits it for me. I think that the GM can stop the player. Do dwarves exist? Is this king a rank bastard? Is all this above? This is all mad knowledge. Give me that campaign book. And the GM can say, hold it, guys. Stop asking these questions. I want to deliver to you a certain experience of this game. And I think it's going to be good. And I hope you guys are going to enjoy it. To do this, I need you guys to stop asking these questions. And I think that that's fair.
Don't ask what the ending is.
I think it's a matter of trust. I think that the GM is asking the players, you have these questions, and humans, by our nature, desire answers to questions. And the GM is saying, okay, you need to stop that nature in yourself. You need to trust me to deliver this great experience to you. Just as much as the GM has to say, if a player gets meta knowledge about some big reveal or some, what, the notes fall in front of him, he's read the book that the story's based on, he's read the campaign books, he's ran this campaign for whatever, the GM has to trust the player to role play that, to not role play the meta knowledge and not do a left-handed role play. This is what drives me crazier than actually just coming out and role playing the meta knowledge is role playing around it. You know the king's a bastard and the character doesn't know that, but I feel that I need to reveal that he's a rank bastard to move the plot along. So I'm going to engage the king into role play to goad him into revealing that he's a bastard. I know his little panic buttons because I read the notes. So I'm going to press all those little panic buttons. And it's like, well, let's roll that back. Yes, it is in character. You can come up with an in-character reason why your character would do that. But really, the reason you're doing that is just to express your metagame knowledge.
Yeah.
And that's a little lame.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it boils down to that. It's not a matter of lying and are you lying to your players? Not. It's a matter of mutual trust. The GM has to trust the players to not play the meta knowledge. The players have to trust the GM to say, listen, certain knowledge is off limits. Just drop it and we'll get to it.
I think, though, there's another direction I'd approach this from, which is, let's say you're in a gaming group where you just have that guy and we sit here and call him a douche and say it shouldn't be happening or whatever. But shaking our fists in impotent rage has not changed the fact that there are groups out there and we have been in groups like that.
And we've been players like
that. Who have that guy who's just super persistent and wants to know something he shouldn't know that will not let the issue drop. And I want to give a sort of two-sided piece of advice for game masters that are in that situation that has worked for me in the past. Number one is to be consistent. You tell them up front, I'm going to present the world to you as your characters understand it. If you ask me, are there dwarves in the setting? I'm not going to say, well, as far as your character knows, I'm just saying, no, there are not. But it's with the understanding that I am presenting the information to you to the best of your character's understanding. And every fact I give you will be done so in that way. And if somebody starts pushing something, I'll say, look,
yeah, I think consistency.
I'm not even going to give you a yes or no on that because of the fact that if we start playing the yes or no game, eventually you're going to piece the metagame information together. And continuing that thought,
I think consistency is very important.
And I will even intentionally introduce some red herrings. Let's say there are dwarves, but there are no elves. Mm-hmm. I may say, well, to your character's knowledge, there are no elves in the setting, but there are people who swear they've seen them.
Yeah.
And so here's something that's not in the setting at all. It's not part of the plot at all. But I intentionally introduce these red herrings. I mean, the first rule of misinformation is you mix truth and fiction. You don't just lie or just tell the truth. You mix the two to the point that they're indiscernible. But as long as you are consistent, and in the course of that consistency, introduce some red herrings, I think you can get some great stuff. But here is the line I would never, ever, ever cross, which is when you as a game master are no longer relating as an NPC to the PCs or as a storyteller to the PCs, but instead are in the role of the game master to the player. You are talking one human being to another, discussing the game at a metagame level. This is where I think it is wrong to lie. Mm-hmm. And I don't say that just from an ethical standpoint, but I say that from a standpoint I think will be destructive to your game. Example of this. At Fear the Con 3, I was running an Epoch Arisos game.
And they asked you, are there dwarves in this setting? You said yes.
There were two times that I ran the game, and the basic plot was there was an alien-held world that they had been hired to go on to and get a guy's daughter off the planet. The first group played through it, and they solved it one particular way. When the second group played through it, there's a small landing craft they had that had some stealth abilities and such, which landed in a nature reserve on the backwoods of this planet. And the players started to get really concerned that the aliens may find their ship and destroy it, effectively stranding them on this planet and making them lose the mission.
A valid concern.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Alien Greenpeace is very, very vengeful.
Yes.
Well, a tree could fall on it.
But it's, and so at first I let it go because it was in character. They're like, well, what happens if they find the ship? And they're talking about some security procedures. They had a pair of attack robots. They're talking about leaving one or two of those back there. Well, then it got to the point where, first of all, the conversation was starting to drag on, and in the course of a con game, I don't have time for analysis paralysis. And secondly, they were also talking about leaving the pilot, who was a player, behind to watch the ship.
Were they going to leave him in the forest?
I'm not letting that player branch out.
Just getting right to the root of the issue.
Uh-huh.
I don't get it. I'm stumped.
That's just because you're barking up the wrong tree. But
I'm pining to hear the rest of the story. Chad, you're such a birch.
Chris, you're nuts. But it's got to the point where it's like they're going to leave a player behind. And there is no plot at this damn ship. The plot is out in the world. And so I finally just paused the game. I said, guys, stop. Look, as a game master, I am promising you, the players, your ship is safe. They are not going to find it. I mean, unless they somehow abused this truth, which, you know, this is what's going to come out of the trust.
It's not about lying. It's about trust.
But I said to these guys, look, unless you guys somehow abuse this truth, the aliens are not going to find your ship. They're not going to blow up your ship. They're not going to sabotage your ship. That's not where the plot is at. Stop worrying about it and go out to the world and deal with the adventure.
Go ye forth and kill thine aliens.
Yes. So you told them to make like a tree and get out of there.
Zing, Pat!
That's as funny as a screen door on a battleship.
Exactly.
It's submarine, you idiot!
We are funny.
Back to the Future was a good movie.
Back to the Future.
I was about to throw out It's Easy as Cake, but that'd be a 2010 reference, which I don't know how many people would get. But anyway.
Look at me, I'm a star who reads books.
That's from the movie.
Oh.
Look at me. I'm a snob who watches obscure movies.
2010's not obscure. It has John Lithgow.
Okay, fine. But anyways, point being that here's something where I told them this in that regard. And if they had then said, okay, gone out on the adventure, and then I turned around and blown up their ship, that to me...
That would have been awesome.
No. That to me... Maybe it's ethical. Maybe it's just the type of game I want to create. But I very rarely make those proclamations. And
you know what?
A player pushed me for one, if they said, well, you just promise us the ship won't get blown up, a lot of the times, even if I have no intention of touching the ship, I won't answer either way. Yeah. Because once again, if you do answer, then the first time you don't answer, you've told them where the plot is.
I think that you can actually turn it around and blow up the ship with a certain group of friends, with a certain, you know, if you have more of a rollicking, rambunctious type of adventure and you had more friends who are into that kind of game, I think you can say, oh yeah, sure, I won't blow up the ship, and then they come back to a smoking wreck. I think it can be made funny, but I think with most people, yeah, that isn't going to work.
See, I have two issues with that. I mean, going back to the original, you know, example of the dwarves, if the GM actually were to just say, no, there are no dwarves, when it comes time for them to actually do the big reveal of there being dwarves, you've already ruined the experience. At this point, the person's like, wait a minute, you said there's no dwarves. They're not experiencing that moment that you're trying to give them. Mm. It's already been ruined because of the lie. And the lie at that point is my second issue with it, is at that point, and me as a player, I would not feel that the GM is playing fair. I want a fair shot at finding the mystery, finding the story, experience it. And if the GM comes right out and tells me to my face something that turns out to not be true, I would have a problem trusting that GM, and I would feel cheated.
Let me ask you a question then, as a GM. How could I present to you a setting or plot information without giving you the reveals, but at the same time without giving you a sense that I had violated trust?
Well, one thing you can start off with, in this case, it's, you know, what race they want to be. You just start off with, these are what's available for you to be. And they don't need to know if it exists or not, very simply.
Well, what if you ask me point blank, are there dwarves in the world?
I think there's a lot of ways that you can answer it, depending on the person. But a simple answer...
Give me an example.
A simple answer would be, there are not dwarves in your starting area. Dwarves may or may not exist. They are not relevant to this.
But don't you think now, at this point, now I can say, well, what about a Waymic? Or what about a goblin? Or what about an elf? And now at first, it seems put you in one of two situations. Either A, you now have to give me the same legalese disclaimer around every single one of these.
Throw out two or
three. PC knowledge handouts.
Dwarves, elves, dragons, all of the typical fantasy creatures that you would expect are thought of as myths in this world. You cannot be any of them in this campaign.
See, this is why it's so easy to be an improv GM. Dan, ask me if there's dwarves in this campaign setting.
Yeah, you don't know.
I haven't decided yet.
Yeah. And so, but you see, I think the problem that approach creates is either you put legalese disclaimers on everything you say, or you put it only on certain things, but the things you choose to put it on pretty quickly, by exclusion, points out where the reveals are.
Yeah, it's a tough question. I don't have the answer I don't have the GM years behind me to come up with a good answer.
Well, should there...
Other than I would have serious issues with a flat-out lie.
Well, and this is why, I think...
But this has never come up in all of our years of gaming.
Well, no, we wouldn't push Dan for this information.
Well, I was going to say, I think the moral to this story is that if you're going to plan a big reveal in your campaign... Don't make it something as easily stumbleable, uponable as
are there dwarves in this high magic fantasy setting.
Don't make it, again, it's just the example. I really wish we could have gotten onto another example, because I think we're just mired down.
Well,
I hate
to beat the dead dwarf.
Well, actually, I did have one piece of advice on that I think.
Telling you, if you're going to do something like that where you want to not have them have access to meta knowledge, then you say, this, regardless of the races that are available, or whether or not the races matter or not, this is what your character will know. And depending upon what class you take, I will give you a secondary handout, and then you just leave it at that. And beyond that, they don't know anything more, and they're going to find it out as they go through.
And, right, so
and you just covered all those topics. And then if they ask questions, say, look, it's all in the handout. If it's not in the handout, then you don't know it.
You didn't put
rivers in the handout. They are all illusions to me.
There are no rivers in my world. It's nothing but seas and oceans.
That's right.
If it's all about a big reveal, you can also change your reveal. So let's say they do discover that you were trying to say that there were dwarves in the world when their people didn't know about it. Maybe there aren't dwarves in the world. Maybe there's something like dwarves. I've been joking about dwarves. But I mean, I definitely wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that and name it something and basically the same thing and make
Minnesota.
It the same thing. But you could do something like that. Maybe dwarves don't exist. Maybe elves exist now. Maybe something else, and that's your big reveal.
Oh, I sure do like me some cheese, eh? I'm a dwarf.
I mean, what would you
do? It's really cold down here.
Along
humans,
those lines.
Humans are so tall up there.
There's two shows going on.
I know.
And they're both rock solid great.
The Chad show and the Everybody Else show until Chris joined the Chad
and,
show.
You know, and the good thing about this is now we'll be one ahead.
Yeah.
I
just added them out. They're the 32nd of... But I think what you've hit on is kind of the advice that I was suggesting earlier, which is you just start with a blanket thing of you just say, guys, look, understand, as a game master, I am going to tell you things as your characters understand them. Every fact I give you will be as your character understands it. If you ask me a rules question, I'll explain that fairly. If I give you a metagame promise, I will keep it. But if you ask me anything metagame, I simply will not reply. It just plain and simple.
Gamebook universes do that, though. A lot of them do that when they have, for the historical information, is done from a narrative standpoint as opposed to a factual standpoint. So, A, I mean, obviously so they can go and they can retcon things later on, but also, too, because it's more immersive in that sense.
Well, but you have a different advantage with a book in that nobody can ask you any questions. You can't push
Absolutely.
The book.
Very true.
I know the easiest answer to this is to say, look, the guy who's pushing you is being a douche, which is absolutely and completely true. But the fact is, for many gaming groups, it doesn't solve the issue because you still have a guy who's your friend. He's part of your gaming group. Maybe you don't have a lot of options. Maybe you do, but he's just your friend. It's just, this is his one quirk. He's just a douche in this one regard.
You know, you were saying that with a book, you can't ask questions. And I was thinking of I think it was a Comic-Con panel when they came out with Donnie Darko, and they had the creators of Donnie Darko, the movie there, and this Uber fan got up front and started asking him all of these very specific, very in-character questions, pointing out some of the plot holes within Donnie Darko, because it's a very weird movie. And the guy who wrote the movie and directed and stuff, and he, at the end of it, he was like, dude, it's just a movie. So yes, you can ask questions.
Not directly of the book, though. He was asking the authors now, this book. Or, well, in this case, the directors or whatever the movie. But my point being that, you get a book. You choose what the paragraph says, and that's all the person gets.
I think that you can look at the Donnie Darko director for some advice there. If your players keep playing 20 questions, they keep pushing it, and you just look at them, it's like, dude, calm down. It's just a game.
Yeah, and I agree. And maybe that's where some of it comes in, is at some point you do say to this guy, look, the point of this is there have to be things in the setting and plot you don't know. If you know it all, why bother playing the game? Why don't I just tell you how it ends and we'll go bowling? Mm-hmm. And there are going to be some people, though, who are going to keep pushing it. And I think there may come a point where you have to accept that as a game master, you've exhausted your toolbox. You've told them everything I'm going to tell you is in character. You've given them some red herrings to chase. You've kept your metagame promises. You've done all the things you can do. But at some point, you may just have to confront the guy and just say, look, stop.
Yeah, shut up about the dwarves.
If you want to know if you want to know what's out there, go look. If you want to know whether the king's a bastard, follow the plot and find out. Just get them to lay off it.
Yeah. You know, one look at the person directly and say, does your character know that information? The answer is no. Then why do you need to know
it? But once again, you have to be consistent with that. If otherwise, you've shown them the plot.
I just don't think it's a huge deal. I mean, we're obviously talking about, we all have a lot of opinions on it. Looking at the thread that I had to lock, everyone had some really strong opinions about the topic. But you know what? I've been gaming since I was 15 years old, and this has never come up. It's not a matter of, it's people you game with. I have gamed with a wide variety of people, a wide variety of types of games and personalities and stuff, and it's just never been a deal with me. And I just don't see it as a big thing.
I totally agree with you. I've never really seen it either. And in fact, I would almost say that I wouldn't even call it, or this topic, lying to the players, because I don't even think that's really what it is. Well, I don't think it's necessarily that you're lying to them. I think it's just, like you're saying, it's information control whatever. It's
totally information control. And like I said earlier, we're framing the question wrong. It's not about, can I lie to my players, or should I lie, or is this lying? The whole point is trust. Do my players trust me? Do I trust my players?
Well, and I think furthermore, from the player standpoint, it's patience.
Yeah.
That's why I think that's what keeps going through my mind, especially with these guys that are just continually, they're going to be badgering you with the 20 questions. It's like, if I were the GM, I would just slap him in the face and say, dude,
no, and
patience.
I would actually,
okay?
It's patience, and it's also a little bit of surrendering of control. The part of the reason why those questions get asked in the first place is you have players who are trying to exert some sort of control over an unknown. They don't know what's going to happen
actually
in this universe.
I disagree, Chris. I think that there is truth in what you're saying, and that can be true. But I think if players were asking me 20 questions about stuff that I don't want to reveal yet, I would be flattered. It means they care. It means they're pumped about the game. They want to know what happened next. And it means I made a really great cliffhanger in the last game.
Well, sometimes
I do think that's also true. But however, for the most part, I think you're wrong.
Well, hold on. I think that can
be. I think you're ugly.
I think that can be sometimes true. The other times, I think the players, as Pat said, are just being impatient. They're just trying to get to the end.
I think you could just pull a Pat. You stand up, you drop your pants. They have a whole new set of questions for you.
And here's
this is a valid new tactic I'm going to use.
If they didn't care about the game, they wouldn't be asking these questions.
Let me end the show with one last piece of advice, which is something else I found that works in certain groups, is in-character deflection. Here's what I mean by that. Let's say we're playing a game and they ask me at the start, is there magic in this setting? And I say, no, there is not. But then as we're playing the game, all of a sudden a guy throws a fireball and all the players stop and look at me and I know they're about to start bitching and I just nod and say, that should really strike your characters as odd. And it gets them right back in the mode of dealing with it in the game, to stop dealing with it player to GM and to start dealing with it in character.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have a question that would actually, I think, pull off into a whole bunch of tangents that we don't have time for. We should wrap up the show at this point, but I'm going to ask it anyway, otherwise I'll forget.
Okay.
On the same topic of should you reveal information to your players, should you, if they directly ask you a question, should you lie to them or deflect them or try, all that aside, what if it's not your plot? What if you have a group of players and one of the other players comes to you and says, I want X, Y, and Z about my character, but I don't want anyone else in the party, in the group. I don't want the players themselves knowing X, Y, and Z about my characters. And as a GM, you're like, great, that's awesome. I'm totally going to go for that. And then the other players confront you about it. They can deduce X, Y, and Z. Or they're on the road. They're sniffing around about X, Y, and Z.
Player-to-player secrets.
Another episode.
It is. Yeah, it is another episode.
Because I've been burned by that before.
Well, I was going to say, because I have a lot to say about it. Mm-hmm. I think it can be great, and I think it can also totally wreck a game. And I've seen it go both directions. Yeah. So I have a lot of thoughts on it. So maybe something we'll come back to either as a banter or as a main topic in 189. But in the meantime, I think that's where we're going to go ahead and wrap this one up. So thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
Bye. Later days.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2010. Listeners are free to use the show in a non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.